Welcome to Modern Signed Books. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their lives and writing with art book specialist, Roger Nichols. And don't forget to pick up a copy of your favorite books at vjbooks.com. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is one of the premier writers of crime fiction. Karen Slaughter burst onto the scene back in 2001 with Blindsided, which became an international success, published in almost 30 languages, shortlisted for the Crime Writers Association Dagger Award for Best Thriller Debut. Since then, she's sold more than 35 million copies of her books, which include the highly popular Will Trent and Grant County series. And since then, she's joined the two. The latest featuring Will Trent and Sarah Linton is The Kept Woman, now out in mass market edition. Very pleased to welcome Karen Slaughter.
Good morning.
What a delight. Now, I'm going to have to do something I never do. I'm going to unlock the storage room where I keep the superlatives and simply say that the prologue to The Kept Woman is flat out the single most chilling introduction I have ever read in my whole life. Without spoiling it, at one point you add an additional detail to an already highly charged emotional scene that rockets the intensity off the charts and sets up a desperate struggle. And then you shift to the first chapter, and Will Trent is worrying about something as mundane as having his dog's teeth cleaned. It's like waking up from a nightmare to boring normalcy. It's fascinating.
Well, thank you very much. I worked very hard on that transition. I always feel like there needs to be some kind of shock in the beginning of the book that grabs the reader and pulls them into the story. And, you know, generally my pattern with Will Trent is he's doing something mundane, like you talked about, or he's very happy in his life, everything's going great, and then he gets pulled into something awful. And definitely what happens in that first opening is really awful.
When I first read it, I grabbed the book and I went to the other room where my wife was, says, "Let me read you this, but sit down first." And she had the same reaction. So then, of course, I had to fight her for the rest of the book, but that's a whole other situation going on. And I know you love hearing stories like that because that means you've done your job as a writer superbly.
Absolutely.
Thank you. When I had an opportunity to talk to you back in 2014 for Coptown, you said a crime fiction's writer's job is to hold a mirror up to society. And as society gets stranger and more stressful, does that make the job easier or harder?
Well, I think that it's two sides of the same coin, you know. As a crime writer, things being harder makes my job easier. But as a human being, of course,
yes, yeah.
I'm pretty appalled by stuff I see going on. But, you know, I think when I write a story, what I really concentrate on is not so much the crime, but how this crime affects people personally, emotionally, and, you know, communities at large. What does this say about us? And I definitely think I'm still trying to hold up that mirror, especially with The Kept Woman, where I'm talking about domestic violence. I just want to show people, you know, this is why sometimes women and men make that choice to stay in an abusive relationship and the consequences for them if they try to extricate themselves.
Yeah, and there are actually multiple examples of that where a number of people in there have been abused in multiple ways, including Will, of course.
Absolutely. You know, I always remind people who are concentrating on the love triangle between Will and Sarah and Angie, who is Will's soon-to-be ex-wife, that Angie's pretty horrible. You know, she's abusive to him. She treats him very badly. She jerks his emotional strings around. She's just not a nice person. But, you know, also she is a person, and there is a reason she is that way, and that's why I wanted to take the opportunity to talk about what her life looks like. You know, both she and Will grew up in the foster care system. They both experienced some horrific things, and, you know, at some point in his life when Will was an adult, he told himself, okay, well, this bad stuff happened, but I'm going to try to be a good person. And, you know, Angie is a counterbalance to that because she said, this bad stuff happened and I'm going to punish everybody and I'm going to do whatever it takes to survive no matter who it hurts. And sometimes that person she hurts the most is Will.
Yeah. You make the point in this story someplace you say that Angie is the only person in Will's life to have been there for 30 years. So there's a...
Exactly. You know, Will did not have a family. Angie was the one who was always his safety net in some ways. And, you know, the fact is she did save him, but then she turned around and punished him for needing to be saved. So it's a very abusive relationship. It's very manipulative, and you know, he I don't know if I think that he loves her, but I think that he thinks he needs her, and sometimes that's even worse than love.
It's an addiction of a particularly horrible kind, because it's very, very hard to shake.
Exactly.
One of the things I enjoy about your writing is you have these little telling character reveals. Faith Mitchell is driving along, and she's texting while driving, and your comment is that she's being one of those cops who only saw infractions in other people. And I think that's a great little character reveal.
Well, you know, and that comes from being around some cops who are exactly like that, you know, and it's a slippery slope, mm-hmm. right, because you don't want police officers deciding what's right and wrong and who gets to do right and who gets to do wrong. But, you know, I think we all have that ability in ourselves. We've all been in the grocery store and we've taken a grape and eaten a grape without paying for it, or, you know, we've been speeding home. And which is breaking the law, you know, mm-hmm. if you're speeding, and said to ourselves, well, I need to get there. I'm just speeding because I have a good reason. Faith is definitely one of those people who can justify her actions.
You know, I want to go back a bit in your background. You said in a previous interview that you were always drawn to crime fiction when you were, and when other people are reading these, you know, much less or maybe less frightening and safe books, you're reading Anne Rule and the Helter Skelter, and that you also lived in Atlanta at the time of the Atlanta child murders. So, do you have any concern about that, or is it something you glory in?
You know, I don't have a concern about it. I just think it's part of how I'm made. And, you know, when my grandmother was alive, she loved this magazine called True Crime Magazine, mm-hmm. which is just basically snuff porn. I mean, there's horrible things happening to women, and, you know, you read it and you are afraid to leave the house. But she loved that magazine. And she read it every week, but she was ashamed that she did it, and so she hid it under a chest of drawers. So I think probably a lot of people have that interest in crime and in the darker side of things, but the difference now is no one's making us feel ashamed about it. I think CSI and shows like that had a bit to do with it, because you could finally admit that you were interested in crime and crime stories.
Well, there's a lot of another nifty bunch of bits of police procedural stuff in here, too, and one of the And I learned some stuff about that, actually, how you work an Eldon card, for instance. I've heard about them, but you go through the detail on how they work that and how they set it up. That's fascinating. Whether you're interested in crime or not, it's still fascinating.
Well, you know, I try to write the kind of book that I want to read, mm-hmm. and I try not to get bogged down in the forensics too much. I want to just give an overview of it, and that was a lot of fun to look into, and I talk to police officers all the time and agents with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and honestly, they've been a font of knowledge for me, and I think people want to know those details because mm-hmm. they want to feel like they're in the middle of investigating a crime themselves and try to figure out what the clues point to and, you know, what's really going on. And a lot of people will try to solve it before the character does, which is fine with me. I mean, I want to play fair with my reader.
Right.
And I always put all the clues out front, and if they put it together, that's great. And if they don't, you know, either way, I hope they still keep reading to figure out how Will finds out what happened.
It does. It does. A couple of other things that I noticed. First is I learned about uremic frost, which I'd never heard of before, and about the fact that luminol only works once, and you have to catch it before it goes away. So that's fascinating, too.
Yeah, you know, we all want to there was a Lifetime movie years ago where some parents went to sleep in the bedroom of their son who was accused of murder, and they said, oh, he's innocent, and then they went to bed in the bedroom where the son had killed his wife, and they turn off the lights, and the walls glow with blood splatters, luminol. But it's a chemical reaction. It only happens once. It happens very quickly, you know, and those are one of the many details that I pick up when I talk to forensics people, and, you know, everyone has something that they're sort of a quasi-expert in, and it really annoys them when people will show luminol just glowing all the time.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, you know, this is the common myth. Let me explode that. And I like doing that for my readers. I like for them to understand what really happens. And, you know, also it gives them some insight into why every crime doesn't get solved, because it's not always easy. Of course, in my books, every crime gets solved, but in real life, a lot of times, the cops know exactly who did it, but they don't have the proof.
Mm-hmm.
And proof is what really makes the case.
Yeah. There's so many layers to this particular novel, and so many interesting and complex characters and the interaction between them. And I mean, every situation is complicated because you start out with an ex-cop being found dead, but he's found dead in this partly completed big giant complex that's owned by one of these sports stars, and of course is surrounded by a phalanx of lawyers you describe as interchangeable Bond villains. It's all wonderfully layered and complex. So, again, it's the kind of book that we love to read. This is maybe why you're doing so well out there.
Well, you know, I think that the crime writers had always held up a mirror to society and said, hey, this is what's going on. And really the genesis for this book was, as I live in Atlanta, where a lot of athletes live, a lot of very wealthy athletes, mm-hmm. and their wealthy agents and wealthy lawyers have houses here, and I wanted to talk about something that I was seeing happening, which is a lot of athletes were being accused of doing horrible things. And, mm-hmm. You know, in some cases, they probably absolutely did it. But unlike a lot of people, they had a lot of money. They were able to hire lawyers and support staff who could get them out of trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that happens more often than not. And we had a spate of cases like that in Atlanta, where, you know, the police were just outgunned because they didn't have the money for the experts, for the lab stuff that was done. And then there's an external pressure that happens when athletes are accused of doing horrible things, where their fans come in and they vilify the accuser and they kind of turn the press against the accuser. And there's just a pattern to it that I saw over and over again, and I wanted to talk about that in my books.
And you did very well in this one because there's a whole lot of stuff, as I say, going on there. There's so many nice little details. I mean, you mentioned once that just kind of in passing, you said Will had worked in a grocery once, and the walk-in where they kept the frozen foods was not dissimilar to the mortuary we goes to visit. So,
yeah, that probably makes people reconsider where they buy their meat.
It probably does. Can I check the provenance of this particular steak, please? There, on a more serious side, there is a page where you describe Sarah's feelings when she loses her husband. And having been through that, having lost my first wife, I identified with it so strongly. I'm wondering if perhaps you had a similar experience.
Well, I lost my mentor, my ninth grade English teacher. And, you know, obviously I'm not ninth grade anymore. I won't do the math and let people figure out how old I am, but it's been a while. And we were very close, and a few years ago she passed away, and it really threw me for a loop. She had cancer, and the loss of her is something I think that I brought to the books. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about that kind of loss. In some ways, you know, a lot of people want to put a time limit on it, or they want to talk about other things, or, you know, they don't really know how to help someone get through that. And honestly, it's something I think you have to get through yourself. But I will say that a friend of mine said to me, you know, your relationship with her doesn't end when she dies. In many ways, it continues. And I think that's true. And I think, you know, Sarah having gone through this horrible thing of losing a man who was, she thought, the love of her life, is something that I wanted to talk about. Because, you know, I talk about people dying all the time in my novels, but I wanted to talk about what that does on a personal level to someone.
And again, that's the similar sort of thing as your thought about what crime does to people. What do these major events or things happening, how do they react to them? How does it affect their lives? How does it change things?
Absolutely. And I think all good crime novels do that. And even novels they don't call crime novels, because people who think they're really smart love them. You know, if you think about Gone with the Wind or The Great Gatsby, or, you know, there are myriad examples of novels that endure in the American and English canon that really are crime stories. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird, you can't get more crimey than a courtroom drama and a man falsely accused of rape who's eventually murdered. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's really important to talk about crime in our society and really investigate what it does to us on an individual level. And every book I write has something to do with that.
When you go to see your friends and the police, the people you've worked with and got information from, do they feel comfortable in opening up with you now or sharing that information?
I think they do. You know, the great gift of some of them is they're retired, so they can say whatever they want. And they're not really telling me anything, you know, top secret information like that. But like any job, there are politics involved. And so people, the agents and the police officers who are retired are a little more free about their opinions. But I think it's really important, in my work at least, that Will is a good guy, you know? Mm-hmm. We have myriad examples of people doing bad things and cops doing bad things, and, you know, you can't turn on and watch the news a week without seeing something awful happen. And I want to show that Will is a good guy. He tries to do well. He doesn't want to cross lines. He wants to stick to the law. And, you know, even when that works to his detriment, he really thinks it's important that he be better than the bad guys and not stoop to doing the things that they do.
And it's a wonderful lesson for all of us, I suspect, out there as well.
Absolutely.
One final thought, quick question. Can we take a peek behind the curtain and see what you're working on next?
My next novel is out August 22nd. That's called The Good Daughter. It doesn't have Will Trent, but I hope people like it anyway. And it's about a family of lawyers. I know what you're thinking. How did I not just kill all of them in the first chapter? But hopefully people will like them and be interested in what happens.
Should be great. There have been some great legal dramas out there, too, as well. Our guest this morning has been the amazing Karen Slaughter, and the book The Kept Woman is one of the finest I've ever read. I really appreciate it, and I heartily recommend it. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Modern Sign Books. Make sure to follow and comment on who you would like to hear next. Feel free to check out our other author interviews. And visit vjbooks.com to pick up